All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're talking about how Deion Jones being out for the rest of the offseason with a shoulder injury means that he's probably almost certainly played his last snap for the Atlanta Falcons, and we'll talk about the two running backs that the Falcons added on Thursday.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And we want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. Of course, Locked On Falcons is free and available in a variety of podcast platforms Monday through Friday. And if you check us out in terms of our YouTube channel, subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube. Give us a like when you do. You'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So, guys, once again, I'm here holding my microphone if you're watching on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel or if you're listening. So I apologize in advance if the audio quality is not quite as good as it usually is, as my hand shakes and struggles and all that various things. Probably shouldn't shake the microphone as I say those things. But today's episode, we're talking all about Deion Jones. And also the two running backs that the Falcons picked up in Jeremy McNichols, as well as moving Avery Williams from cornerback to running back. We'll talk later in the episode about, you know, if those moves are going to move the needle for the Falcons at the running back position. But let's jump into the conversation about Deion Jones's immediate future here in Atlanta, which is probably non-existent. He was reported that he will miss the rest of the Falcons offseason due to having a recent cleanup surgery on his shoulder. And this, for me, and I talked to a couple other people that covered the team to sort of get their read on the situation, and they had a similar read on it. It seems, you know, not to sit here and say that he's faking an injury or anything like that, but it just seems kind of convenient that Deion Jones is going to miss the rest of the offseason, because this is typically what teams kind of do when they're trying to trade a player and they're like, you're done here, you know, just stay away from the building. And this is kind of a very convenient opportunity for the Falcons to keep Deion Jones out of the building for the next several weeks as they probably workshop a trade for him. We talked about this with Jarvis Davis of ATL Day One's podcast on yesterday's episode. And I basically asked Jarvis if he thought Deion Jones would be on the Falcons roster come the opening of training camp. Jarvis said no. And after today's news, I'm kind of in the same boat where, like, I'm 99.9% confident after today's news that the answer to that question will be no. And to me, the question is really not, you know, only has Deion Jones played his last down in Atlanta, but it's rather, are the Falcons going to find a trade partner for him or just simply wind up releasing him at some point this summer? If the Falcons do decide to trade Deion Jones, and I guess it's not really their decision because it takes two to tango, but according to overthecap.com, the Falcons will save nearly $15 million in salary cap space this year. He'll still count about $5 million in dead money this year and then another $5 million in dead money next year. And that's the reason how that works is basically that happens when you make roster moves after June 1st. That's sort of that hard deadline, which basically the way it works is you are able to spread dead money over the course of 2 years rather than just it all sort of accelerating into 1 year if you cut a player between, say, February and June 1st. If the Falcons cut Deion Jones starting next week on June 2nd or later, the dead money hit in 2022 will be $19 million instead of the $5 million. And they'll only get a savings of about $1 million this year. They will still also have to carry that $5 million in dead money hit next year. So obviously trading him would be ideal for the Falcons from a financial standpoint. But, you know, this has been kind of the debate discussion we've had here on Locked On Falcons for several weeks now, if not several months now. I've been told, you know, from folks that say that the Falcons have been, let's call it, open to trading Deion Jones ever since March of last year. They haven't yet found any takers, and that is why I continue to be skeptical if they will find takers at any point this summer. Certainly, it's possible that they could get a team trading for Deion Jones, but typically in the NFL, most trades happen in March, in August during at the end of training camp when roster cuts are being made, or in October right before the trade deadline hits, usually that, you know, on Halloween or right after Halloween. Obviously, we saw Julio Jones get traded last June, so, you know, June trades are not unprecedented. July trades are not unprecedented. They do happen from time to time, but generally speaking, at this point in the calendar year, NFL teams' rosters are full. They have 90 guys on the roster. If they don't, it's because they haven't signed their rookies yet. They don't typically have a ton of cap space because they've now used all that in March and April in free agency, and now what cap space they have is devoted to signing their rookies. And so a team trading for Deion Jones is going to be difficult at this point in time because that team would have to absorb like over $9 million. Deion Jones's base salary this year is $9.6 million. So if the Falcons were to trade him, the new team acquiring him would have to have at least $9.6 million under the cap in order to make that trade possible. And there's just not that many teams out there. I think there's like 10 teams in the league currently that after they sign their rookies, we'll still have about, you know, 10 or more million dollars in salary cap space. And so, you know, it's a very short list of teams that would possibly make that trade. For example, we talked earlier this week on possible destinations for him on Monday's episode. And I mentioned the Cowboys and the Jets, largely due to the expectations that because Jeff Ulbrich, his former position coach here, and Dan Quinn, of course, the defensive coordinator in Dallas, they know Deion Jones, and so they would be much more inclined to vouch for him for their acquiring teams. But the Jets are, you know, about $9 million under the cap right now, but they need about $12 million to sign their rookies. So they couldn't sign their rookies and acquire Deion Jones without making another move to free up basically – you know, they would have to free up like $20 million in cap space, or no, I'm sorry, like $13 million in cap space in order to acquire Deion Jones. And so that's why it makes it unlikely the Jets will come calling. And then the Cowboys, I think, have about $10 million in cap space, even if they sign their rookies. So they could absorb Deion Jones's contract, but then they would have to make other roster moves in order to carry cap space into training camp and into the season where they would need that money. So this is why I remain skeptical of a trade developing. And I think ultimately, if I was to bet money on it, I think ultimately the Falcons will kind of shop Deion Jones for the next couple of weeks. And then if they don't get any takers, either in sometime in late June or early July, we will probably see him get released by the team. So I feel like we're probably 6 or so weeks away from Deion Jones no longer being an Atlanta Falcon. And if it's, you know, if we're a week away, it's probably because a trade has been worked out. If we're not the case, then he'll probably be released at some point in the next 6 or so weeks. So we'll just sort of see how that develops. Obviously, we'll keep you locked here on Locked On Falcons. And, you know, we'll spend today talking a little bit more about how did it come to this with Deion Jones. He was a beloved player here in Atlanta, and now all of a sudden the Falcons are essentially potentially willing to eat, you know, almost $20 million in dead money just to be rid of him. How did we get here? And we'll talk about that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons podcast, guys. But before we get there, I do want to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast feed, where you can find three different shows with four different personalities giving you their thoughts on all things Atlanta, all things Georgia, as well as sort of the national headlines as well around the sports league. That's A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanitra Batiste. Find them all on your preferred podcast feed or on YouTube. And if you check out the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast on YouTube, you'll also get the Atlanta Braves postcast. So you can get the breakdown from Locked On Braves after each and every Atlanta Braves win and loss. And guys, I want to tell you about Athletic Greens. They produce a product that I now take every single day. It's basically a multivitamin, but I don't have to take a million different pills. It's just one scoop of their AG1 product with a cup of water first thing in the morning, and my day starts off right. Included in AG1 is 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens in a special blend of ingredients that improves gut health, improves the nervous system, improves my immune system, boosts my energy, my recovery, and my focus, all throughout the day. And you too can reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition with AG1. And making it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free year-long supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs of AG1 with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NFL network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NFL network to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So the question, of course, is how did we get here with Deion Jones? And for the most part, I think it's financial, right? The reason why the Falcons are moving on from Deion Jones at this point in time is financial. The fact that he's counting $20 million against the salary cap. If he was only counting $5 million against salary cap, we wouldn't be talking about the Falcons cutting or trading Deion Jones. If he was making $10 million, we probably would not be having the same conversation. But the fact that he's making $20 million makes it so that he's not necessarily living up to that price tag. And if you've been a longtime listener of this Locked On Falcons podcast, you know I have been critical of Deion Jones's play on the football field. Going back to 2017 and 2018, we were talking about his struggles against the run way back then. You know, if you have been a longtime listener to the podcast, going back to a similar time frame, you heard me questioning concerns about Deion Jones's leadership. And those are the two main issues that when you hear people criticize Deion Jones today, it's mostly he's not good against the run and he lacks leadership, right? And we touched upon this on yesterday's episode with Jarvis Davis talking about the leadership and the accountability on yesterday's episode. And to recap that, you know, basically most leaders in the NFL are lead by example types. And that's where accountability matters, right? Football is a team sport. You need all 11 guys on either side of the ball working together. And so accountability matters. You do your job. I do my job, all that various things. And the leader is the guy that is supposed to hold everyone accountable, right? That's who the leader is. And the issue that I've talked about with Deion Jones is he can't hold other people accountable because he's not accountable himself, right? That when he's not showing gap integrity against the run, he's not fitting his gap and doing those things. He can't then go to Devondre Campbell or go to Rashawn Evans or go to whoever and say, hey, you're not doing your job. And then they'll look at him like, you're not doing your job. And so you can't be a leader if you're not accountable. And so, you know, obviously that does not work well under Dean Pease, especially given that he comes from that Patriot school of do your job mentality. But again, this was something that we were talking about years ago on this podcast. Like I remember, you guys remember Jordan Richards back in 2019 when he was replacing Keanu Neal that year. And everybody was like, why is Jordan Richards continue to play? And my explanation on this podcast was Jordan Richards comes from that Patriot school of thought, which is do your job. And the Falcons don't have enough players at that time then that are, you know, fill that mantra. And I think that's what one of the things the Falcons were trying to bring to the table with a guy like Jordan Richards. Obviously, he didn't do his job particularly well, but that type of attitude of we need more guys to do your job. And that's when we were talking about Deion Jones and maybe he's not one of these guys doing your job. And so it gets back to the conversation we've had earlier this week about Troy Anderson and his future in Atlanta. And while I think it's fair to sit here and say that Troy Anderson is going to be much more willing to try and do his job, at the end of the day, it's really about, you know, the willingness and the heart and the toughness and all those various things is fine. You need that, but you need to be able to execute that job. And that's one of the concerns I have about Troy Anderson in the future and why I kind of liken him to Deion Jones. You can sit here and question the willingness and the heart and the want to in Deion Jones. You're not questioning that with Troy Anderson, but ultimately at the end of the day, if he's still getting cleared out of holes by fullbacks, right, it doesn't matter that he has the willingness. You got to go out there and do your job. So that's going to be the concern with Troy Anderson in the future. And ultimately it kind of boils down with Deion Jones to being financially driven as well as those football things. But you know, I would liken it to borrow a phrase from our good friend, Keith Armstrong, former Falcons legend and specialties coach. You know, his statement was, you're not good enough to be an a-hole, right? And basically, you know, in Deion Jones' case, you're getting paid too much money to be an a-hole, is why the Falcons are moving on from Deion Jones. And essentially, when you look at the rest of the linebacker room, where you have a whole bunch of guys making somewhere between $1 million to $2 or $3 million a year with Rashawn Evans and Nick Kwiatkowski and Troy Anderson and Michael Walker, like we can find guys, you know, we can sit here and question whether those guys can be able to do their job effectively, but you know, we can find essentially a-holes for $1 million for a lot cheaper than what we're paying Deion Jones. And so that's why the Falcons are moving on from Deion Jones. Again, I would all argue from a football standpoint, if Deion Jones was still an elite coverage guy, the Falcons would be more than willing to make an exception for him in his excessive salary. But he has not been that effective in coverage, at least early as he was earlier in his career. I've charted the Falcons defense for the last 3 years. And in 2019, which to me is the last really good season that Deion Jones has had, his success rate against when he was in man coverage, teams throwing at Deion Jones in man coverage, their success rate was 23%, which is elite, right? He was a running back eraser in those seasons. But in 2020 and 2021, that success rate against in 2020 was 52%, in 2021 was 46%. Now, 52 and 46% aren't bad numbers, particularly if you were a cornerback going up against wide receivers, but going up against running backs and tight ends, those numbers are not quite ideal at that number. You shouldn't be as effective, as efficient throwing to the running backs and tight ends as that, as you are throwing them to wide receivers. So speaking of other players exiting the team, we're kind of done with the Deion Jones conversation at this point in time. Let's talk a little bit about John Kaminsky, who was released on Thursday to make way for Jeremy Nichols, who we'll talk about to wrap up today's episode. But, you know, Kaminsky was a player that we always knew was going to be a project. His release today is not a huge surprise. I did not expect him to make the roster if he was brought to camp. We've already seen several of those 2019 guys exit this offseason, leaving just Chris Lindstrom, Caleb McGarry, and Quadri Olison as the only 2019 draft picks left remaining. And frankly, I don't think McGarry and Olison are certainly guaranteed to make the roster this year. So we'll see how that goes. You know, Kaminsky had quite a bit of hype train after that breakout performance in that Hall of Fame game against, I think, the Broncos in 2019, his first summer here. And then, you know, the hype kind of cooled off because he got hurt that year. That kind of led to the rise of Jacob Toody-Mariner that season. And then I thought we saw Kaminsky make progress in 2020, but he still was primarily a raw pass rusher like he was, you know, playing at Division II, Division III, wherever he was playing, where he was primarily relying on his strength and his effort to win. Even in 2020, and he was able to get away with that going up against Division III players. But if you remember back to my scouting report on John Kaminsky back in 2019, I questioned whether or not he was going to be as effective doing that at the NFL level, and that proved to be true. He was decent, but not great at that. And then with the scheme shift at, under Dean Pease this past year, he wants more defensive linemen that are sturdy, that can hold the point of attack, and Kaminsky being in that 285, 295 range, wasn't quite sturdy enough. He was much more of a better fit in that more disruptive attacking fronts and defensive scheme that Dan Quinn and Dean Pease's predecessors had. Now, I think the Falcons did find something with Kaminsky midway through the season after being inactive for most of the season. In that second Panthers game, they activated him and they put him as an outside linebacker, and he was really good in that game against the run, right? He's, you know, given how big he is, he's pretty good at setting the edge. And so I was wondering to sort of see if the Falcons would continue that. Maybe he would slim down, all those various things heading into the summer. But obviously the Falcons kind of nipped that in the bud. And it was certainly going to be an uphill climb for him to make the roster, given the presences of Lorenzo Carter, Arnold Ebiketie, Ade Ogundeji, and D'Angelo Malone, that you would all assume would be locks to make the roster if they're healthy. And so Kaminsky was potentially competing for a fifth outside linebacker spot that, if he was going to make the roster, was primarily going to be a special teams driven role. And while Kaminsky has dabbled at times on special teams, part of the reason why he has been inactive and not really been utilized that much over the last couple of years is because he does not have a regular role on special teams. And that was going to be an uphill battle for him to climb this summer. So the Falcons obviously are moving on. He'll get a chance to catch on elsewhere. We wish him the best on his NFL career moving forward, but obviously it's probably not going to be in Atlanta. And so we will move on in today's episode of the podcast talking about the running back position. We'll talk about the player replacing John Kaminsky on the roster and Jeremy McNichols, as well as Avery Williams moving from defense to offense. And we'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons, guys. But before we get there, let me plug the Locked On Sports Today podcast, hosted by Peter Bukowski, where he's giving you the lowdown on all the sports news that you need in 20 minutes every single day on your preferred podcast platform, whether that be Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, or, of course, on YouTube. So, guys, the Falcons did sign Jeremy McNichols, a longtime journeyman backup running back, on Thursday. He's most recently with the Tennessee Titans, spent the last 2 years there, playing under Arthur Smith in 2020 as Derrick Henry's primary backup that season. And then this past year started out the season that way, but then Henry got hurt. And unfortunately, he was surpassed by Falcons legend Dante Foreman, as well as Dontrell Hilliard this past season. So essentially, he finished the year as their fourth string running back. Other notable thing is McNichols did dabble with the Chicago Bears. So Ryan Pace rears his ugly head once more, spent 5 weeks on their practice squad towards the end of the 2019 season. Ryan Pace, Dave Ragone, Charles London was the position coach there, now the Falcons quarterback coach. So obviously the coaching connections and, you know, reason number 412 why the coaches and Ryan Pace run the Falcons personnel decisions, not necessarily Terry Fontenot, but we'll talk about that on a later day. You know, prior to landing in Tennessee, McNichols was a journeyman, bounced around the league. The Falcons are actually going to be his eighth NFL team, because prior to joining the Titans in 2020, you know, he was originally drafted by the Bucs in 2017 and was featured on Hard Knocks that summer, but it's been with the 49ers, the Colts, the Broncos, the Bears, the Jaguars, the Titans, and now the Falcons. So, you know, I look at this as more of a camp body move than a move that's going to really move the needle for me. Primarily, his role in Tennessee was to basically sub in for Derrick Henry as their third down pass protector. And based off of at least his Pro Football Focus grades and whatnot, he wasn't particularly great in that. He was okay, below average, I think you probably would be the best way of describing it. He is coming off his most productive season as a pass catcher. However, he was one of the most utilized screen receivers in the NFL at the running back position. Of the running backs that had 25 or more targets this past year, McNichols had the highest percentage of his targets being screen passes, according to Pro Football Focus, which was 44%. So to me, this move, I think, is really bringing in another challenger to Damien Williams to be that third down pass protector, that role primarily filled by Mike Davis a year ago. And the Falcons need to find that player. I don't think Tyler Allgeier is that guy. He struggled in pass protection at BYU. Kwadri Olison has been an ineffective pass protector throughout his 3 years in Atlanta. Damien Williams is the one guy that's kind of proven in that arena. McNichols brings some value there. And of course, you know, Williams is also, we found out on Thursday, is going to miss some time due to injury as well. So I think this is the Falcons having, you know, trying to take advantage of whatever absence that Damien Williams has to bring in somebody else that they can evaluate as a third down running back. And we'll see sort of if McNichols can make an impression. I think he has a chance to make the roster, but I think it's basically Damien Williams' job to lose. And so unless injuries or just a poor summer he happens to have, you know, I think McNichols is also fighting an uphill battle, but maybe it's not as steep as, say, someone like John Kaminsky. The knock on McNichols is that he doesn't have a ton of experience on special teams, right? He did dabble as a kick returner last year with the Titans, but obviously we know he's not going to be the main guy here in Atlanta in that role. The guy who is going to probably be the main guy in as a kick returner this year in Atlanta, as he was for most of last season, was Avery Williams, obviously subbing in for Cordero Patterson when he became more utilized on offense. Williams was very effective on that. We also found out today that he is moving permanently to the running back position after being a cornerback last year with the Falcons, a cornerback for several years at Boise State. He did begin his career at Boise State. He was recruited to be a running back before moving to cornerback, I believe, as a freshman. He did play as a running back his senior year, I think, in high school, was very productive in that role. So it's not sort of unheard of. Obviously, the return skills, he's comfortable with the ball in his hand. So this move should not be something, you know, out of left field or anything like that. There's been speculation amongst others for several months that we might see more of Avery Williams on offense. I want to say that we talked about it very briefly on the Sky Report last year. I can't recall, though. So we'll see what that does. But you know, similar to McNichols, I'm not necessarily high on, you know, Williams' role on offense. He does bring a little bit more speed to that position, but outside of maybe a gadget play or two, I'm not expecting him to have a significant role in offense, largely due to the fact, going back to the main issue, the reason why McNichols was brought in is pass protection, right? We talked about this last year with Javian Hawkins and why I wasn't as high on Hawkins making the roster going into the summer as a lot of other people were, is because the history of sub 190-pound running backs, and Williams was listed at a 187 coming out of Boise State last year, is not great, largely due to the fact that those guys tend to struggle in pass protection, right? Week one, whoever's going to be the Falcons' main running back in pass protection is going to be expected to have to block DeMario Davis when he's blitzing through the A-gap. And frankly, you know, much better running backs and much bigger running backs the Falcons have had over the years have really struggled blocking DeMario Davis. So frankly, you know, pardon me when I don't necessarily have a ton of optimism that Avery Williams is going to be the solution to this. But I think this is a good move for Avery Williams because I think it may wind up having more meaning for his role on special teams than it does in his role on offense, a changing role on offense or defense. And the main reason for that is I think the Falcons may be wanting Avery Williams to become their personal protector on their punt coverage team. Last year, Williams did perform primarily as a gunner. There was one game, I think it was week four, where he did work as the team's personal protector. Last year, their primary personal protector was Daron Harmon. Damian Williams has experience as a personal protector. Obviously, Harmon is gone. Dee Marlowe has experience. Eric Harris has experience. Typically in the NFL, most personal protectors are running backs or safeties. Eric Weems was a notable exception to that when he was here in Atlanta performing that role. And essentially, that's kind of what Avery Williams' job is supposed to be. Like, I would say, like, does it really matter if Avery Williams is a cornerback or running back? No, just like it didn't really matter that Eric Weems was a wide receiver. Who cares? His job is to be a special teams player, to return kicks, do all those various things, and be an ace cover guy. And that's primarily what Avery Williams is here to do. So whether he's getting reps at running back or getting reps at cornerback ultimately doesn't really matter to me all that much. However, I do think if he's going to be the personal protector on the team, these reps at running back are meaningful because those reps that he's getting in pass protection, where I do think he's probably going to get a little bit overwhelmed against some of these, you know, outside linebackers when he's trying to chip, you know, Arnold Ebiketie and Lorenzo Carter and whoever else, you know, that's going to be valuable because that's primarily what the personal protector is. That's the guy who's the last line of defense to prevent a blocked punt, right? And so you need those reps if you all your experience is basically being a gunner and basically being, you know, a guy that's screaming down the field. You need those reps. You need to learn that skill set. So this to me is more about special teams probably in all likelihood than, you know, Avery Williams having a significant role on offense. Like, again, we could see him getting some opportunities on some gadget plays here or there if the Falcons want to get a change of pace guy. But we know based off of how Arthur Smith called his offense last year, that's probably not going to be a significant part of the Falcons offense. Every now and then they might throw a screen out there to Avery Williams and say, hey, Avery Williams, let's throw a screen pass your way. See if you can do something with it. If he does, great, awesome, wonderful. But if he doesn't, then, you know, again, you already have sort of proven screen guys and Patterson and McNichols and Damian Williams as well. So this idea that Avery Williams, you know, maybe he's an exceptional screen guy. Who knows? But like, unless he is, then we're probably not going to see a whole lot of him on offense. So we'll see how that goes. You know, yeah, that's it. I don't have anything else to add with the running back position. Probably means Deion Jones is done in Atlanta. That's the summary of today's episode. McNichols is basically a camp body to give the Falcons some insurance in case Damian Williams isn't as readily available, I guess, going into training camp due to whatever his injury is. And Avery Williams gives the Falcons an option, you know, a sort of a gadget player on offense. But primarily, this is probably more about his changing role on special teams than it is necessarily that, you know, he's going to be this valuable asset on offense. And, you know, the Falcons do have some options at gunner to replace Avery Williams in that role, who's arguably, along with Ozzie, the best guy. Obviously, you have Ozzie, you have Frank Darby, you have Kadero Hodge. You brought in Mike Ford, and I think probably one or two other of the defensive backs that you brought in also have experience as gunners in this league as well. So we'll see how that battle sort of goes, and we know Avery Williams can do that. So if they don't get two guys that emerge from that position that they like, they can always keep Avery Williams there and put, you know, one of these other guys, Harris Marlowe or Damian Williams, as a personal protector. So this is covering the Falcons bases. This is more about special teams than I think it is offense or defense or anything like that. So that's the summary, guys. That's it. We'll be back, I think, on Sunday night, if you're watching on YouTube. So make sure you subscribe to do the Desmond Ridder scouting report. Everything's on deck, you know, on schedule for that to still happen Sunday night on YouTube. And of course, that will be available Monday morning for all of you that subscribe to Locked On Falcons on your preferred podcast platform, whether that be Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify. Of course, we thank you for doing so. And we still have some content from Thor Nystrom on Desmond Ridder. So that will probably also be on deck later this week. And we'll probably have a couple other guests on as we talk a little bit more about some stuff. So yeah, still a lot of draft related post-draft sort of content and whatnot. And we'll talk a little bit more about OTAs and that mandatory mini camp. And we'll keep an eye on this Deion Jones stuff and talk about maybe some, you know, if we wind up moving on from some guys like Deion Jones, talk maybe a little bit more about some of the roster moves. We've talked about, you know, adding offensive linemen, adding a defensive lineman. So we might go through, you know, some of these guys that are currently available around the league to see if maybe any of these guys tickle the Falcons fancy as well next week. So if you want to provide your feedback over the weekend, of course, you can do so by hitting me up on Twitter at Lockdown Falcons, on Facebook at Lockdown Falcons. You can send an email to lockdownfalcons@mail.com. And of course, leave a comment here on the illustrious Lockdown Falcons YouTube channel. So guys, that'll do it for us here. Appreciate it. Hope you have a great weekend. Till then.